me, Al, folks, and welcome back to another episode of Get Wrecked, the only podcast anywhere in the world where two buds take turns recommending and reviewing some of their favorite pop culture hits, hidden gems, and oddities. I'm, of course, your host and resident silly boy Thor, joined today, as always, by my friend and co-host. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's magical Mr. Mistopheles. Wait, no. It's Micah. It's Micah.
It's just me. I am not magical, the magical cat. Mr. Mistopheles. Yeah. A rum-tum tugger.
Which sounds vaguely sexual.
Most of these names sounded vaguely sexual.
That's fair.
What a weird movie we just experienced.
Yeah, a movie based on a musical that I have to imagine was weird for a musical, too.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I've got a lot of questions.
Me, too. Before we started recording, I was like, you need to have ChatGPT ready, because I have a lot of things I'm curious about with this. Oh, man. Before we start recording, though, or talking about cats.
Cats.
Oh, man, Micah. I am so glad the holidays are over.
Yeah?
Yeah, this is the first, because this is my first time, like, last year, Dean was probably like he was 5 months old. Last Christmas season.
Okay.
And at that point, they're still a baby. They don't necessarily understand like changes in routine and stuff like that. This is my first year as a parent where my son kind of has a routine in place.
Okay.
And then it's like a big change in routine.
And it really throws them out of it?
Dude, oh my God. So we spent like 2 weeks before Christmas, I got really sick and he got sick. We got better, then Kendra was sick for like a week. The week after that, the week before Christmas, I was off. So it kind of throws his routine out of orient a little bit.
Sure.
Because I'm home all week. And then we drove to Virginia to hang out with my family. So that Thursday we left. So it's like a 5-hour drive. Then we're staying in a hotel for 3 days. Mm-hmm. He's interacting with a lot of family who he's never met or only met once.
Sure.
It's a lot going on. It's fucking up his sleep schedule. We have a big holiday party, the whole family, the 21st. That's a Saturday.
Okay.
We go back to the hotel that day. The next day, we're hanging out with my mom. And basically, everyone who was at the party is throwing up sick. Just like literally everybody was sick. Like basically everybody who was there was sick.
Throwing up at the party?
No, after the party. Okay. So basically everybody who was there was like, oh shit, I'm sick. Like actually that Saturday night, we got back to my mom's after we like napped at the hotel and we're hanging out. Mom's like, yeah, grandma's upstairs. She was just tired. She's wore out from just all the kids. She was just like overwhelmed by everything.
Sure.
Not long after that, we hear my grandma upstairs just puking her guts out, just, ugh! And we're like, oh, fuck, grandma's dying. But yeah, so that was like the start of it. And then slowly, like one by one, everybody else who was there is like, yep, we're sick. We're throwing up.
Oh, my goodness.
Kendra and I luckily avoided it.
Okay.
Dean did not. So we're driving home. And it's usually about a four and a half hour drive, depending on traffic. Mm-hmm. Took us 7 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Because the whole way home, he just keeps puking. And just endless. Jeez. So every time we got to pull over, we got to change him. Literally, the second half of the trip, Kendra was in the back with him. And at that point, he wasn't even like, there was nothing left for him to puke. So it's just like bile, just like stomach acid. And literally Kendra is sitting next to him, catching it in her hand and like throwing it out the window as we're going down the highway. Dude. Oh. So, and then it's the week of Christmas. Actual Christmas Day, dude. We had like one big present for him, which was like a little trampoline he can jump on. And then maybe like 5 or 6, just small presents.
Okay.
Because he doesn't need more shit. He's a baby. He doesn't really care. Mm-hmm. So he was super excited when we come down Christmas morning. He opened like two presents.
Okay.
And then we tried handing him more presents. Full meltdown. Full berserk meltdown.
Okay.
And he is not like a super tantrumy baby, but for like that whole week, it took us 4 days to open all his presents.
Oh my God.
Because he would open like one or two at a time and then he'd just be like, I'm done. And then just these full tantrums of like he's never experienced, like I've never seen him do before.
Interesting.
He's a pretty like a pretty happy kid.
Sure.
Usually he doesn't like tantrum and go crazy often. Dude, but I think just all between being sick for on and off for like 2 weeks straight, all the change in his like daily routine and shit, it was just like I was exhausted. I was exhausted after the last 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I have 30 years of like coping mechanisms to deal with it.
Sure.
He does not do. And it was like, I mean, just full like, dude, there were days where it was like, I don't condone hitting your children.
No, sure.
And I would never want to hit my kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to shake him like an Etch-a-Sketch. Yeah. Just like, oh, stop, dude. So it's the new year. We're finally back to a normal schedule. And yeah. I'm like, thank Christ the fucking holidays are over, dude. I was like,
he's gotten back to his normal.
Yeah, we're back to like a normal routine and life is kind of normal again. And mm-hmm. I'm like, fuck the holidays altogether. Because it was just, dude, it was so much, man. I'm so happy to be back into the normal routine of things. Both the last two episodes went out late.
Yeah.
Just because I was either sick or tired or sick and tired and just like, literally didn't have it in me to fucking sit down for an hour and a half to edit the episode.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's being a parent, man.
Yeah, it's like, welcome like, to parenthood.
Yeah.
I wasn't surprised by it.
No, no, but it definitely is a... It's when, like, when you see a parent going through that, and then you've been through that, you can give them a look, and they'll give you a look... And it's paragraphs of information. It's like, I know what you're going through, man.
I
get it. Just, you know, get through this. You can do it. I believe in you. Like, kids, am I right? And that's all you got to say.
Yeah. Oh, man. How are your holidays? Cool as mine?
Yeah, definitely not as bad, I don't think. Because my daughter's at the age now where she's like getting excited for Christmas.
Yeah.
And so she's wanting to like, she's getting excited for opening presents. She reached that really annoying phase where she's too excited to fall asleep Christmas Eve night. So, and we did the like leaving stuff out for Santa and the reindeers.
Okay.
And Ashley, of course, is like, why are you doing that? We don't have any cookies in the house. Like, we can leave something out for Santa. We'll leave something out for him.
Do you leave him, like, some celery and buffalo and ranch?
Yeah, so our family shindig with my family was on the 22nd. And so with that, we have, like, a white elephant Christmas gift thing.
Okay,
and
cool.
I ended up with a $20 pack of Ferrero Rocher chocolates, like those little balls of chocolate in the golden aluminum foil.
Dude, I would kill my family for some Ferrero Rochers. Dude,
they're so good. It was like four different flavors. There was normal. There was dark chocolate. There was a coconut flavor and something else. I don't know. They were all delicious. So I was like, we'll leave Santa out some chocolates. So I put three out, and we left some carrots up for the reindeer. So. You know, after I put the kid to bed, I went down and ate a plate of food, but I ate it real messy, like so that you know, Freya would know that Santa had been there.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I like chewed up all the carrots and like spit a couple crumbs out of carrots onto the plate and wrote a little note. So it was good. It was fairly peaceful. We've got a lot of family to visit, so that's always kind of it's nice. it's peaceful, but it's busy.
Yeah.
So I think that I'm glad to be over it.
Dude, that's why my family, so like I said, the Saturday before Christmas, we did, because my family, I mean, I have probably like 20 nieces and nephews. I have a brother, a sister, my sister passed away and she had kids. Mm-hmm. And then like stepbrothers, stepsisters, you know,
sure,
cousins with kids. So I have probably have like 20 like kids in my life between nieces and nephews, second cousins, shit like that.
Okay.
And so my family does like a big, before Christmas, we all just get together and we do a big white elephant thing. And okay, it's pretty fun because it's like with this like 20-sided dice you roll. It's like, pass your gift to the left, pass your gift. Like everybody, oh, okay, gets a present ahead of time.
Gotcha.
And then you like pass it to the right. You can steal presents. You open a present based on it. It's fun. But yeah, we all get together and just do like a big party before Christmas. That way, actual Christmas Day, everybody can just stay home and say fuck off to everyone else.
Yeah.
Which was, so Christmas Day was actually, aside from Dean like being like, I'm fucking done with presents and flipping out, once we got past that,
yeah,
he was good.
Okay.
But yeah, I think that's the way to do it, is like just big family get together before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And then actual Christmas Day, you can just stay home and relax.
Yeah, Christmas morning is always a relaxing time for us in this house. Like, we'll get up when we get up. We'll get around to gifts when we get around to gifts.
Dude, I told you, Dean. So, Dean is a year and a half year old, mm-hmm, years old. And it's fucking insane. So, Christmas Eve, he would not sleep.
Yeah.
Now, once again, like I said, his schedule was all fucked up and it was a little bit weird. But it was like he knew something was going on. That Christmas magic of like, I'm waiting for Santa. He would not go to bed Christmas Eve. It was like almost midnight before he finally fell asleep, because he was just fighting sleep. And then I was like, okay, no worries, we'll get to sleep in. I swear to you, this kid sleeps till 7:30, 8 o'clock, 8:30 some days.
Okay.
He is not like he sleeps good. Went to bed at midnight. Fucking 5:30 in the morning, he woke us up.
Nope.
Ready to be awake. It was like he fucking knew Christmas was happening. I don't know how, but dude, I swear to God. Yeah, man. But holidays over. There was a lot of good times, but it was also kind of tough. I did. Kendra and I watched Klaus, which I know is like your favorite Christmas movie.
It's a really good one. Yeah.
And it is such a funny movie.
Yeah.
It had been a while, probably since it like first came out, that I saw it.
Yeah.
I forgot that like the whole thing is just, it's like this postman who's doing these like random things. And then like the myth of Santa is built around him. Like he ate the cookies from these people.
Yeah.
And the whole concept of the naughty and nice list was because this kid was being an asshole. And he's like, hey, Santa will not bring you presents if you're being a dick.
Yep. Basically. Yeah, it felt, that movie really feels like the character, I forget what his name, the postman, he really feels like somebody who is making it up as it goes, and then it just turns into this big thing.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of, and it is a funny take on Santa, because if you think of the story of Santa,
mm-hmm,
that's also kind of how it sounds. It's just like somebody making it up as they go.
Yeah. Oh, we watched Red One for the holidays.
Oh, yeah, not bad, right?
Actually, not awful.
Yeah, pretty good.
It wasn't, I don't think that it was a good movie, but it was entertaining. And I think that that's what it needed to be.
It's a fun Christmas movie.
Yeah. I think that that's what it needed to be.
I don't think it, yeah, exactly. It didn't need to be a good movie.
Yeah.
We watched that as well, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I actually did too. I know that it bombed really hard in the theaters, and a lot of people are shitting on it pretty hard. And they're like, The Rock, this is The Rock's worst stuff. And I'm like, well, it's not great, but at the same time, does it need to be?
No, it's supposed to be silly and funny.
Yeah. Speaking of not great movies.
Is it time to get into Cats?
I think we got to talk about Cats, the movie, the musical.
So many questions.
It's a jellicle joyride of a movie.
Yes.
That's what I've heard.
Let's get into a whole list of dumbass names.
Hey, folks, make sure to stay up to date on all the latest episodes by following us at Get Wrecked Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. Or if you have any recommendations you'd like to hear us review on the show, you can contact us directly via email. Or, I don't know, maybe you just want to send us some feet pics. You creep, I don't know what you're into. I don't care. We'll review those too. What do you think of that, huh? In any case, all your requests, feedback, and general criticism of the straight white patriarchy can be sent to getwreckedpod@gmail.com. That's GITRECDPOD@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Alrighty, folks, so today we are discussing the film Cats, based on the, I'm pretty sure, is the longest running Broadway musical of all time by the same name. This was released a few years ago. I'm thinking 2019, 2020 maybe.
Yep. 2019.
And it follows the story of a bunch of cats in London.
Is it London?
I think it's London. They kept mentioning London, so I'm assuming it's London. Somewhere in England. Yeah, Micah, so this was recommended to us by our wives basically as a punishment.
It was, yeah.
Because it was like we were recording two episodes of the podcast. First one went long. And we're like, can we do another episode? And they're like, yeah, but you have to take our recommendation. And they recommended this, I'm pretty sure, just to torture us.
I think so. 100%.
Yeah, so Cats, we just watched it like 10 minutes ago. And we immediately came down to start recording this. So our thoughts are hot, fresh, and ready for your enjoyment.
Yep. Yep. I have a lot of thoughts about this. It mainly revolves around the question why.
Why was it recommended? Why does it exist? Why did anybody think it needed to exist?
Why does the musical exist? Like, what is... As we are watching this, I kept thinking, this is based off of a beloved musical that had a absolute long-run showtime. Or, like, long-runtime in Broadway. Why? Like, what about this play, as a play, is so endearing that people just kept having to go and go and go and go to see this? To see Cats?
Yeah.
To see people sing, like cats, about cats, and use words that don't mean anything for 2 hours? Why is this such a huge hit?
Why did people love this so much? So I'm going to take it. So we have ChatGPT pulled up, ready for all our questions.
Sure.
You should ask ChatGPT, why is Cats so beloved? I'm going to take a shot at it.
The
before
movie or the play?
Because the play. Musical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think we're going to have, neither one of us has seen the musical.
This is true.
So, which I did find interesting watching this, understanding that it's like, understanding that having not seen it, that all of this is, I'm assuming, it felt pretty true to a musical as far as like the backgrounds, the scenes were all obviously like heavily CGI'd pretty poorly, which we knew going into this, that the movie you had said, told me before we recorded this last week, you had told me like, yeah, this movie had to be pulled from the theaters to have the CGI redone while it was still in theaters. So I didn't expect good CGI. It lived up to that expectation.
100%. Well, but at the same time, like, how do you, we'll get into it. We'll get into it.
Yeah. It's very bad. I mean, without a doubt, but yeah, it was fun watching this. You could kind of feel that it was definitely like, it definitely, you could tell it was pulled kind of directly from the musical.
Yeah.
Why I think people probably like this, a couple of reasons. I think because the parts where you have like some of the ballet dancing style stuff,
sure,
it actually did feel like really well choreographed. I'm not a huge ballet guy. Go figure.
Go figure. Yeah.
The main star, Victoria, the main character in this. I was looking up her IMDb a little bit, and she's an actual, like, ballerina.
Okay.
She dances for, let's see if I can pull it up real quick. Let's see, where is Victoria at? Why is she not right at the top? Why is she not at the top of IMDb?
Francesca Hayward?
Yes, yeah. Let's see, I saw... Oh, your internet sucks. Francesca Hayward, she's a principal ballerina at the Royal Ballet, having trained at the Royal Ballet School. She's performed... I'm just reading this directly off IMDb. She has performed a number of major roles for the company, including Clara in The Nutcracker, Aurora in Sleeping Beauty, and... the title role in Giselle. So she's like a trained ballet artist. I do find it fascinating. One of the things I liked about this film was like the like these real small, nuanced, intricate movements of the ballerinas.
There was a lot
that
of...
make them really feel feline. I do think that's like a testament to ballet as an art form and kind of like a person, the art of simply moving one's body.
Yes, I would agree.
So I think that's probably part of the appeal of this.
Of the
because
play.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think ballet is kind of like the perfect. Cats have such this like fluid and unique and recognizable type of movement, and I think ballet is a really cool way to capture that. I think it hits a lot of musical themes. Like, it kind of runs through these, like, classical musical stylings as well as... I think Cats is from the 80s, late 70s, early 80s is when it premiered. And it kind of... it starts off on this kind of, like, synth sound, but it also hits these, like, classical musical themes as well as when Rum Tum Tugger, my favorite character, comes in. He has these, like R&B kind of musical themes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it hits a lot of musical themes. And I think it's just meant to be fun. We were talking about this while the movie was going, was like towards the end, there's this song that kind of stinks, but it's like, but it's like literally the whole time I was thinking like, is there a theme? Is there like a metaphor of this movie?
Yeah.
And I think it's just the person who wrote it was kind of obsessed with cats. And it's just, the whole thing is just about cats.
Yes.
It's there. I don't think there is a deeper theme to it. And so I think it's just fun. So all the, and I think some of the music is actually really, really well done. Not necessarily my particular cup of tea,
mm-hmm.
but as far as musical goes, I mean, I think it's actually like there's some pretty intricate stuff being done. So that's my guess as to why people like this musical so much.
All right.
Now tell me why I'm wrong.
Okay. Yeah. So as far as why I said, why is the musical so beloved? So here are the bullet points. Innovative production and staging, memorable music, universal themes, which when I saw that from ChatGPT, I'm like, what universal themes are we talking about here? Family-friendly appeal, cultural impact. Those are the 5 points for
okay.
this. So, as far as the innovative production and staging, and also with the cultural impact, it's saying that it ushered in the era of mega musical with its large-scale production and global reach.
Okay.
So, as far as like big, grandiose production of musical, I think. That this was a pioneer, according to ChatGPT.
Okay, that makes sense. Probably like big stage set designs and things like that. Okay.
Yeah. So that, I guess, makes sense as to why the show would be good on stage, because it's a spectacle. But that, to me, I don't know. When we were watching this, I remember turning to you and us having a quick chat. Because there's a point in time where Victoria is... it's like the first song that Victoria gets. And she's talking about the I don't even know what the cat is, what her name is. But it's the one who's like...
Griselda or something like
yeah,
that? Hold on.
Like,
let me find
up.
It's who Jennifer Hudson plays.
Yeah. So she's having this like one-on-one...
Grisabella.
Grisabella. That's right. How could I have forgotten? Grisabella. And I remember you saying like... it's weird that with all the whole spectacle thing, like, this is actually not bad.
Yeah.
And I had the same exact thought.
The best part of this film, I don't know if that's true for the musical, but it was like a stripped down part where there wasn't all these crazy effects. There wasn't all these like crazy dances and spectacle going on. Mm-hmm. It was literally this like really heartfelt song. And it's, I think we started out that conversation because I was like, oh, I recognize this song. It was the only song I recognized.
Yeah.
And it's a song called, I believe it's just called Memories.
Memories,
la da 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 da. It's an incredible melody. It's great. Mm-hmm. But it's like this really sad song where Grisabella is this old washed up star cat. And, you know, and she's like lamenting that Victoria is young and has her life in front of her. And Victoria is kind of like, I'm a fucking street urchin. I was tossed out. I have no family or friends. So like, while you're sitting here crying about your memories and how you don't have anything anymore, I never had anything.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm jealous of you that you have these ghosts of happy memories to look forward to. And it's actually like, genuinely, I thought it was the highest point of the film.
Yeah, I thought it was actually pretty good.
And it's literally just a couple of close-ups of them singing. Mm-hmm. And there's very little showmanship going on. It's literally just, I think, a really well-written and performed piece of art at that point.
Okay, so I am in agreement with you for the movie. Now, again, neither of us have seen the play. But I think that it's strange that you and I are saying that the best part of the movie is the part with none of the shit yeah. that made it good about the play, or yeah. like that made the play good.
Yeah.
I don't know what that says about the movie. I don't know what that says about the play. But let me tell you, the storyline for this movie has got to be like a 2 out of 10 scale.
Okay.
Every single song, which was nonstop, by the way, there was maybe a sentence or two between songs.
That wasn't sung, yeah.
Yeah. And the first 8 songs were just a cat singing about themselves.
Yeah, it was just introducing the different cats who all have... They didn't even elaborate on this, but there's like every cat has 3 names. The one that their owner gives them, some second name they don't even mention, and then the 3rd name, which is their actual name.
Yeah.
This is one of my notes I made. I just want to go down through the names of the cats real quick.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Monkestrap. Demeter. Play-Doh, Socrates, pretty Victoria, you know, pretty standard names.
Mm-hmm.
Syllabub, Mr. Mistopheles, he's magical, of course.
Of course.
Tantamile, Jellylorum, Macavity, that's Idris Elba. We will talk about Macavity in depth
about Idris Elba's character.
Two of my favorites, Rumpelteazer and Mungo Jerry.
What are you saying, Thor?
None of this Alonzo makes sense. Alonzo, Admetus, Electra, Jenny Anydots, my favorite, Rum Tum Tugger.
Rum Tum Tugger.
Grisabella.
We were watching this and you're like, I think I fucking love Rum Tum Tugger.
I do love Rum Tum Tugger. I actually genuinely, probably my favorite song was Rum Tum Tugger's introduction song. Bustopher Jones. That was James Corden's character. Growl Tiger. Griddlebone, Old Deuteronomy, the Dame Judi Dench's character.
Yep.
Gus the theater cat, and Gus, of course, short for Asparagus.
Asparagus, yeah.
Skimbleshanks, the railway cat, liked him. Bomba Lorena. Let's see if we can find some more silly names.
You know,
there's a bunch of people just listed as chorus.
Yeah, a cat that I actually liked his singing voice. The guy who played this cat was Robbie Fairchild.
Okay. I hit all of them.
Okay. Well, this one is called Monkestrap.
Monkestrap. Oh, yeah, yeah. He was like kind of the male lead.
Yeah. I actually really enjoyed his voice. I thought he had a very good singing voice.
Yeah. His face is him. For whatever reason, every time him dressed as a cat came mm-hmm. onto the screen, it made me laugh. Like, he just looked so silly as a cat.
Yeah, so the people looked absolutely ridiculous. I think that we should talk about this in categories. I feel like visuals is one area.
Oh, for
that,
sure.
That we have to cover. I think maybe the plot is another area, and then notable
notable roles, maybe?
For sure,
For another area. So out of those three, Thor, what suits your fancy?
Yeah, let's talk about the looks, the overall looks of this.
The overall looks? All right. It's pretty bad. And I think what they were trying to do was simulate what the play was, right? Because I remember growing up and seeing, like, screenshots of the play.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, that's clearly a person in a cat costume for this play. And I felt like there's this aura of acceptability when you go to a play, because you know that these are people and you understand that they're trying to portray cats, but we don't have the anatomy of a cat, therefore we're wearing a cat costume.
Yeah, yeah, when you're going to see a musical, you're using practical effects.
Yeah.
This movie could not decide whether they wanted to use practical effects or CGI, so they kind of mixed them together in a way that is disorienting, I think.
It really, like, if you think about the Uncanny Valley situation, it was super distracting in many of the scenes. I thought that it was weird that they had human anatomy and human faces and human hands and human feet, but cat ears and fur on all of their body except for their face and their hands, and had a tail. And for the most part, everybody was naked through the entire thing.
Yeah, well, and, like, everything is... So, and that's what, like... Okay, you remember when we watched Tank Girl?
Mm-hmm.
And they had the fucking... the kangaroo costumes? And they kind of animatronically moved?
Mm-hmm.
Somehow that movie from 1994 or 5, whenever that was made... The visual effects of that movie, which are all fully practical effects... 1,000 times better than this film, which used a mix of practical and CGI, because I don't know if you noticed, like, the cat's ears would move and the tails would move, but all that stuff was CGI. So they had costumes with their tails and with their ears, but rather than, like, find a practical way to make them move and then maybe just enhance them with CGI, it's just fully CGI.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it looks, like, so... distracting and strange.
Yeah.
Like, it's just crazy to me that Tank Girl had better effects than this movie.
Well,
a movie made 30 years ago.
I think the weird thing about it is, like, I don't feel like the Tank Girl kangaroo people were believable kangaroos.
That's fair.
Right? Yeah. But your brain kind of sees that it's a costume and then just accepts it. And it's less jarring, I think, because you're like, okay, this is a person in a costume.
Yes.
But when they remove that from... When they remove that and now it's just a person in like a green skin suit and they've CGI'd fake fur and ears and everything, it doesn't have the same... Like, your brain doesn't go, oh, this is a person who's a whole lot of special effects are being applied to. So it really falls into this, like, their movements are very cat-like through this.
Yeah.
And so you've got a person with male anatomy, but then they're moving like a cat, and they've got weird feline fur and ears. It was just very discombobulating to me. It was very strange.
It's very strange. Honestly, I think probably the best... portrayal was the main Victoria, where hers was very minimal, and it was clearly just a girl. I don't think they used much CGI for her. It was clearly just a girl in a ballerina costume with, like, you know, the face makeup and stuff, and kind of blended in. I felt like hers was the cleanest, the most simple, and it was the one that bugged me the least and didn't make me laugh.
I think if they would,
like, when Judi Dench came out, or Ian McKellen, dude, Ian McKellen's
cat
as a
outfit.
Cat is so funny.
Dude, he really embodied, I don't know if this was the goal, but it felt like this was the goal. Everybody has seen a cat that you're pretty sure is going to die any day. Any day, this cat's going to die. right? Like, it's when you go over to your friend's house and you're like, this is our cat. We've had it for 18 years. Yep. And like, if you pet it, and the fur falls off.
Yeah, and you look at it and you're like, that kind of looks like Ian McKellen.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Because, like, you saw Ian McKellen and you're like, Ian McKellen's going to go. He's going to go real soon.
Yeah.
Like, he just seemed... So I don't know if that was intentional, but he really did seem like he was on his last leg, his last live of all nine of them, and like the end of his last life. So that was kind of fun. Judi Dench really weirded me out with this because I don't know if... Was Judi Dench wearing a fur coat?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
On top of her cat outfit. Yeah.
So that brings me into the question of, like, what fur is that? Because that would be the equivalent of you and I wearing a coat made of skin.
Yeah.
All right? That'd be like an Ed Gein situation.
Yeah, yeah, wearing a skin suit.
Yeah,
yes.
Or is she just, like, have that loose of skin that she can have a floppy
coat?
No,
she was definitely wearing a coat.
Okay.
She was definitely wearing a fur coat.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it did not even occur to me that... it's a little bit of,
it's a little weird, right?
A little bit strange.
It's a little
yeah.
strange. But I think that if they would have taken the movie and not done CGI for the outfits, all right, done practical suits, practical outfits, I think that the widespread, I don't know, fury isn't the word for this, but I mean, this was just panned across the board for its visual effects.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Because of how weird it was. And I think if they would have just done... done just traditional suits and put like facial prosthetics on them to make them look like a cat, quote unquote.
Yeah.
I don't think it would have been viewed as horribly. I really don't.
No. Because honestly, I'll tell you, I did not hate this nearly as much as I thought I would. Is it like my cup of tea? No, I'm not a huge like musical guy.
Sure.
And it is very musical.
It's very musical.
And kind of like traditional musical.
And musical for no reason. This might be the reason that I don't like musicals. Cats might be a good example.
I could see that, yeah.
This movie could be... I could tell you the story of this in a couple of sentences. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Victoria shows up. A whole bunch of cats are around her. They sing. All of the cats introduce themselves and say, hey, there's a ball. They go to the ball, but this one guy... I forget his name.
McCavity.
Like, McCavity, all right, wants to be chosen. So
he's an evil cat.
He's an evil cat
who can teleport people for some reason.
Yeah, and so he wants to be chosen, so he hides everybody else so that he can be chosen. And then Deuteronomy says, I'll never choose you. And Victoria finds an old washed-up hobo cat, brings that in, and they choose her to go off into space. Done. That's the movie. It doesn't need to be 2 hours long.
No.
Songs... that are like 5 minutes long describing a character that I don't care about doesn't do anything for me.
And also oftentimes don't really have any importance. Like, once again, my favorite character, Rum Tum Tugger, he has this whole song introducing him and he's basically like a tomcat. He's the bad cat. He's the cat that you go to pet and he's like, no. And you know what I mean? He's
yeah.
just kind of like his own cat.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a fun cat. I like cats like that.
Sure.
Too. You know what I mean? I love a cat that won't just come up and pet you. You got to kind of like bring him in. And then even when you're petting it, sometimes it'll just bite you and be like, ah, and just bite you for no reason. That's Rum Tum Tugger.
That 100%.
And I kind of love cats like that.
Yeah.
He had a whole song introducing him.
Yeah.
And kind of like Victoria kind of wants to fuck him. You know what I mean? And he kind of wants to fuck her. Like that's the kind of whole thing. Like she's like attracted to him.
Mm-hmm.
After his song in the intro, he basically has no role in the rest of the film.
Nothing.
He plays zero role in the rest of the film.
Yeah, I think that's the same for...
Rebel Wilson's character,
yep.
As well as James Corden's character.
Yep, 100%.
They're introduced and then basically have no purpose in the rest of the plot of this story.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So much of the music of this does not forward the narrative of the story. It's just, hey, here's a fat cat that likes to sit around. And this other fat cat is super fancy.
Yeah, and once again, so next question you need to ask ChatGPT is there like a... like a metaphorical meaning to cats. Because during Ian McKellen's story, my thought was the exact opposite of what you said, why people like this, the musical. Because during, gosh, what's his name? God, I'm not going to remember any of the names. How could you?
Asparagus?
It's impossible. Yeah, Gus. Old Gus.
Old Gus.
I felt like, okay, this musical is kind of paying tribute to a lot of, like, old school musical stuff, where it's a real focus on the beauty of ballet and dancing. There's there's this whole, like, tap dancing scene. And Gus's song is kind of about how, like, oh, theater has changed. Production has changed. There used to be this emphasis on story and performance.
Interesting.
And
now this play and now has no emphasis on story.
And now it's like just this like whole big budget thing of what's the most wild thing. And so I thought like, oh, is this whole musical just supposed to be like kind of like showing like the creator's love of old theater? But really, you come to find out that this, once we read this, that the whole thing is like it changed theater to the opposite of what his song is about.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
As well as the final song where it's just like, nope, it's just about cats. And it's just kind of pointing out how funny it is that cats have different personalities.
And cats are not dogs, Thor.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
I forgot that part.
Yeah. Don't ever describe a cat as a dog.
Is there some metaphorical hidden meaning to this that we missed?
Watching? I got to be honest. I think that ChatGPT is really reaching. But,
okay.
But here's... here's what it's saying. There are themes of identity and redemption, which, okay. I don't think that that's like a message or anything. Interpretations of Jellicle choice. That's another word.
Yep.
The central event of the Jellicle Ball, where one cat is chosen to ascend to Heaviside Lair and be reborn, has been interpreted as a metaphor for salvation of or the human desire for a second chance. This selection process prompts reflections on mortality, the afterlife, and hope for renewal. So, no. Nothing there for me, anyway. Is there any deep... like, I don't get that. Like,
I don't think so. I mean, I do get that. It is kind of everybody being like, we're cats and we want a second chance. Sure, I get that. But I mean, like...
but why cats?
That's not like a hidden meaning in any way. That's...
Some analysis suggests that the various cat characters symbolize different facets of society or human nature, each embodying distinct virtues, flaws, or archetypes. This allegorical approach allows the audience to draw parallels between the feline personas and the broader human experiences.
Okay.
Maybe.
I mean, again, I get that.
So the last paragraph that ChatGPT gave me, which tells me that ChatGPT is just bullshitting, it says, in essence, while cats does not convey a singular explicit message, its rich tapestry of characters and themes offers a canvas for audience to explore the concepts of identity, redemption, and the human condition.
Okay, so it's exactly what I initially thought at the end of this film, which is, no, it's just about cats. And it's just about, the person who wrote this was like, isn't it funny how cats all have very distinct personalities? Let me write a musical, like this big, grandiose musical about cats. Because I think it's funny that they all kind of have their own unique personality. I do not think there's anything more to this.
Yeah.
Which is kind of hilarious because watching it, you do kind of feel like, oh, is there something deeper going on here? No, it's not. It's a big joke on you. The whole thing is a joke on you as the audience.
It's...
which kind of makes me like it. It honestly ratchets it up a notch for me.
Oh, yeah.
Because I like that concept of like... it feels like there's something deeper going on. There's not.
There's not. There's not. It's just about cats, folks.
It's just about cats.
Yeah, you thought that there was like some Animal Farm allegory or...
exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Nope, not the case.
Nope, just... It's just about cats.
Yeah. All right, so the next thing we got... let's talk characters, yeah?
Okay, yeah, for sure.
Okay. Your favorite character, Rum Tum Tugger?
I love Rum Tum Tugger. I thought he was so fun. I liked that. As far as performances, I love Victoria. I truly do. I think it is not for a typical protagonist. She was actually, they did an interesting thing where the story is kind of told through the perspective of Victoria, and it follows her. She's the protagonist. She doesn't have a lot of solos.
No.
She's not, like, the story does not really revolve around her, even though it's told, like, through her perspective. I think the, I hesitate to call her an actress, because once again, she's a professional ballerina.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think she is just, like, incredible, though. Once again, watching this, I was kind of blown away of, like, how like intricate and kind of beautiful ballet can be, and how much she really replicated the movements of a cat through like these very nuanced small movements in her body. And it's really a fucking sight to behold. And once again, I think that's probably a big part of why Cats was so, if this is kind of how Cats was portrayed on set, in person in the musical, I kind of get why people liked it so much, because I really was, it gave me an appreciation for ballet I didn't know I was missing.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
So I really liked her performance. I think Ian McKellen, although it was very silly, also very, I mean, he's the fucking goat, dude. You know what I mean?
He's pretty great.
Put him in anything and he's just like a magnetic person, I think. I think.
Did you mean to do that? Was that a thing that you meant to do?
I did not. No.
Okay.
He is a magneto of a person.
Yeah.
Judi Dench, nothing to write home about, which is kind of like surprising, I guess.
Yeah.
I could be also that, directorially or whatever, but like it just didn't feel. I wasn't particularly impressed. I love Idris Elba's character.
Oh my gosh. Dude, I think he's my favorite.
It's so funny every time he disappears. What are all the things he said when he made somebody disappear?
He yelled ineffable once. He's like, ineffable! And he just vanishes.
And they just disappear. Yeah.
And then once he just yelled his name, he's just like, McCavity!
McCavity! And then they disappear. I think that's the time he took Ian McKellen's character, old Gus.
Yeah, and once he just yelled meow. Just meow!
Very funny. Bad performances. Taylor Swift stunk. I mean, so Taylor Swift has a part in this, and once again, I'm going to keep coming back to this, like, ballet thing, is, and, like, just dancing thing, is, it goes to show you just, like, how untalented she is, that she has, the part she played was, like, a singing part that wasn't particularly difficult.
Yeah.
And, like, choreography wise did not require that much did not require like a whole lot of like really in-depth difficult choreography,
yeah,
which is kind of perfect for her. It's like, hey, let's attach this huge name to it that doesn't really require that much talent, because that's kind of Taylor Swift's whole thing, and that's why white girls love her, because she's mildly talented, but she's managed to be wildly famous and bang a bunch of like hot famous dudes like John Mayer and shit. And it's like, it gives them something they can live up to, you know, something that they can like idolize. Like, here's this girl who is average looking, has a small butt, is mildly talented, and has managed to bang a bunch of hot famous dudes and get super rich doing it.
So, I would say that Taylor Swift is very good at making catchy music.
Correct, yeah.
And I think that catchy music sells.
And she's very much portrayed as like, oh, she writes all her own music, which I think she does, but I don't think people understand that like in pop music, it's not like she creates all her music. She probably comes into the studio with probably has the outline of a song. She writes the chord progressions, mm-hmm. and like most of the lyrics, but then she goes into a room with a producer and then crafts those songs into what they become. And I think she has a good ear, and I think she's a very talented person. I was being a little bit,
sure,
but she's not
I got you, yeah.
But she's not the best singer. She's not an incredible dancer. She's honestly not even the best songwriter. She's just, you know, she's kind of average at all those things. But I think she has like a really good ear. I think she has a really good eye for marketability.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's very good at that. And I think she has a good ear for like what's going to be catchy. And she's very open and honest in her lyrics.
Yeah.
But like, aside from that, like, I don't think she's uniquely talented in as far as like, she's not a great songwriter. She's not an incredible singer. She's not a great dancer.
What if I were to tell you that she took cat classes for this movie?
That would track. That would make sense.
Yep. So she played a character, Bomba Lorena was her name, and she attended a cat school.
Yeah, which she was basically McCavity's, like, henchman.
Yeah. And she attended cat school along with the other cast members, so it wasn't just her. It wasn't like, okay, everybody, we got this. Taylor Swift, you need to attend cat school.
Yeah.
So, but no, they learned to crawl, stretch, and move like cats to make their performances more convincing.
That's cool.
I want to see the film of all of these actors just crawling around on the ground and somebody going, no, that's not right. This is how you move like a cat.
Folks, all right, I'm putting a challenge out there to the listeners. Get us to 1,000 subscribers on Spotify. If you do that, Micah and I will take cat classes.
Oh,
and
yeah,
we will film it, and then we will post it for you.
Sure, yep, I guess I'm in this. Also, Idris Elba was allergic to cats. which, you know, has really no effect on this movie
yeah,
at all.
In no way at all.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie cost around $95 million to make. And it had
$95 million? Well spent,
yeah.
Micah.
And it had about $115 million worth of marketing.
How much did it make?
It grossed $75 worldwide.
I'm so happy about that.
Evidently there were rumors online about a butthole cut of the movie. The butthole cut is in quotes, where early CGI versions of the cats included anatomically accurate details, but that the studio removed them digitally before the film released.
Oh man, I want to see that. You know, that may... We're going to rate this at some point, and that would honestly probably put it up or 2 points higher, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to see it. Oh, we were still talking about performances, so I went off on a Taylor Swift tangent,
as I
tend to do.
I think that as we have done.
Okay, so any other performances you liked?
Specifically. I liked Robbie Fairchild's singing voice. He was Monkey Strap.
Yeah.
I mean, Mr. Mistopheles was fine. I really did not like Rebel Wilson's character.
No, it was silly. It was same with James Corden.
Yeah.
They were both the silly... They were the comic relief. They were the silly fat cats.
I didn't care for either of them.
I don't generally like either of them anyway. Oh, that forgot. Put a pin in Rebel Wilson.
Okay.
We'll come back to it. Other ones, anything else you liked, didn't like, cast what? I liked the tap dancing cat, the railway cat.
Oh, yeah, sure. That was kind of fun. I like that he entered so confidently in the middle of a song and then just took over the entire song.
Yeah, that was funny. His name is Skimbleshanks, the railway cat.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, another one that, like... He enters, has a song, and then plays no role the rest of the film. He just basically... He was one of the contenders for... Jesus Christ. What Jellica to be, like, the Jellica cat to be raised up to the...
Mm-hmm.
The Hellosphere or...
Yeah.
The
to
whatever.
Space.
Yeah. We'll have to get into that. Jesus, there's so much with us. But yeah, I liked him. His name is Stephen McRae. He does not even have a picture on IMDb. He is another person who is like in the musical ballet world.
Yeah.
He's known for The Nutcracker and it stains the sands red in 2016. So I think he's once again another like actual stage performer, not a
not an actor.
Yeah. Gotcha. Which you can tell once again, because I mean, he's doing some incredible tap dancing, mm-hmm. which as we were watching this, I'm pretty sure I said it. I was like, dude, tap dancing is pretty dope. Like,
sure.
I do think tap dancing is very cool.
Yeah. Well, somebody on on Rotten Tomatoes gave this a score, and here was their review. Are you ready for it?
Yeah, please.
It's unlikely. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Well, since I've started reading it, this is not the one I wanted to read, but it's unlikely anyone will be feline good after witnessing this catastrophe, because ultimately it was the morbid curiosity that killed the cats. That's not the one I wanted to read.
That's a good one, though.
Yeah, it was a pretty solid one. Here's another one. There's a lot of really good ones in here, by the way. By some chance Skimbleshanks, the railway cat, doesn't want to make you poke your ears out and wish that music had never been invented.
Jesus Christ.
Bless your sincere furry hide.
Wow. So I guess I'm alone in liking Skimbleshanks. Maybe it was just that those suspenders with no shirt and that ripped bod I liked. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Some person just put, I think there's a film of there's a film version of Cats that could work. This isn't it.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so Rebel Wilson. On the way here, I was talking to Kendra, because her and Ashley recommended this to us, mm-hmm. and I was like, did you actually watch this movie?
I was just going to say, I don't think either of them have watched it.
And she goes, no, I made it 10 minutes in until Rebel Wilson's character came in, and at that point I turned it off because I couldn't watch anymore. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, my wife is she's a fan of the movie Lucy.
Mm-hmm.
She's a fan of a lot of movies.
She's got a spotty record.
Yeah, where it's like she likes stuff and I'm like, I don't understand why. Like, sure. I said, she's just along for the ride. I've ruined many things for her. And even her, she could not take this film.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, and so as we were driving and she said that, I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, what am I in for? Although I think had she stuck it out, she would have found some things that she liked.
She might have.
Because I think the mid part of this movie is probably the best, where you get some of the stripped down performances that are really great singing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best like choreography scene is when they meet Deuteronomy. And they're all doing this like really beautiful dance in the halls of the Egyptian, which is where the Jellicon cat ceremony is going to happen.
Yeah.
I think that's like a really visually and choreography wise, I think a really well done scene. I think genuinely the highlights of this film are kind of like the midpoint, where it kind of slows down from the silliness and the craziness.
Yeah, because I remember watching it being like, oh, man, this is going to feel really, it's going to feel longer than 2 hours. I remember thinking that at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
And then at the midpoint, I would agree. I'm like, okay, so here are some redeemable things.
Yeah, that's
and
where then, I started being like, oh, I actually kind of like, there's some stuff I like about this.
Yeah, but then I think it goes off. I think it goes down. It drops pretty hard. So
yeah,
it's like a hill of a movie. Like it starts low.
It's a real parable.
Yeah.
Like not parable story, but like parabola.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, but it's not a very high bell curve.
No.
it's just a little bump. Yeah. It's a speed bump.
There's
of a
some
movie,
stuff where
you
you're like, oh, this is okay. Yeah. Nope. Nope.
Never mind. Yeah. Ugh, my word. So I was correct, Thor, when I talked about this last episode. There were scenes where people's hands had not been CGI'd to be cat hands, like with the fur and stuff.
Okay.
Actors and actresses still had their wedding rings on, and so those were in there. And it was out for a week, and they made adjustments and re-released it a week after its initial release.
Wait, so that's the only part that they redid? Was the hands?
So the film's original release contained, this is on Wikipedia, contained numerous CGI errors and glitches, such as one scene where Judi Dench's human hand, complete with her wedding ring, appears instead of old Deuteronomy's cat paw. After poor reviews, Universal notified cinemas on opening day that an updated digital cinema package with, quote, some improved visual effects would be available for download on the 22nd of December, urging them to replace the current print as soon as possible. Studio executives and cinema owners said that the decision to release the modified version of a film already in wide release was unheard of.
Well, they broke one record, at least.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's kind of wild. This film is not great.
No.
It's... Some of the music was on... Okay, who is this for? That's... that because it's clearly not for us. If you really love musicals and like you love the theatrics of musicals, then this might be for you. If you love cats, and specifically not dogs, this might be for you. If you like movies that have an ensemble cast, this might be for you.
I don't think so. Because honestly, you really only get a touch of the people you know. The most important roles are by people you do not know.
Yeah.
And I think it's for the best.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of the best performances are from the people who are actual stage performers.
Yeah.
Victoria, Mr. Mistopheles, who I don't necessarily think... I think he's been in some movies, but he's definitely not a big name. The cat guy you were talking about, Monkey Finger or whatever his name is.
Monkey Finger, yeah.
But, like, Judi Dench is not great in this. There's a part where her leg lifts up in, like, a split that I'm like, I'm pretty sure she had a rope attached to her leg.
Because
there's
no way
she could stretch like that. Ian McKellen was okay, but, like, not a great showing for Idris Elba. It's just too silly and wacky.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great showing for Taylor Swift. Not a great showing for James Corden or Rebel Wilson. It's just...
They're
all around not a great showing for the people who are not like engrossed in this type of art.
Mm-hmm.
But I think all the performances of the people, like the unrecognizable people, I honestly thought they outshined all the big names every step of the way.
Yeah.
Even Jennifer Hudson. I mean, she's such an incredible singer and an established actress, so somebody who can do great things, and just not even the part where they're doing Memories the second time and she's like crying and singing it.
Yeah.
I was disappointed that I was like, this is not, you should have did another take. It just wasn't like, it just wasn't great.
Yeah. Well, this did win some awards and was nominated for some awards.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I can't see why, but go on.
Well, it won the 2020 Dorian Award for Campiest Flick of the Year.
Okay, makes
sense. It also won...
It is the definition of camp, I think.
Yeah, it won the following Golden Raspberry Awards.
Oh, raspberries are bad awards.
Yeah.
That's not an award you want to win.
So, it won Worst Picture. It won Worst Director. It won Worst Supporting Actor, which was James Corden.
Yep, that's fair.
It won Worst Supporting Actress, which is Rebel Wilson.
Yep.
It won Worst Screenplay. And it also won the Worst Screen Combo, which is an award presented... I think it's,
to like an entire cast.
It's to the worst film pairing or cast of the past year, and that was any two half feline, half human hairballs. So it was the entire cast.
Oh man, that is a shame. I do think there were some good performances.
Yeah, well, Judi Dench was nominated for Worst Supporting Actress.
Yeah, she was bad in this.
Yeah, Francesca Hayward was also nominated for worst actress.
No,
she didn't win. So there's that.
She shouldn't have even been nominated. She was like the shining point of this film.
Yeah. Jason Derulo was also...
Jason Derulo was in this?
Jason Derulo
was
Rum Tum Tugger.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, Jason Derulo, I loved Rum Tum Tugger.
Yeah,
fuck
so
them.
So the he was nominated for worst screen combo of him and his CGI neutered bulge.
Okay, that's fair.
Yep.
What? Come on. What are you gonna do? You're gonna CGI out that dude's bulge? He was that dude's packing. Come on, give him a break. Give him an award for that bulge.
For that bulge. Yeah. Oh man, there's yeah. I don't know if I have much more to talk about this.
We do. So there were two concepts I was confused about. I googled while we were watching it.
Okay.
The first is the whole theme revolves around this concept of Jellicle cats.
Oh, that's right.
And they don't explain what that is. So a Jellicle cat is a fictional feline from T.S. Eliot's 1939 poetry collection, and it's called Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats. Not a whole lot of explanation there.
Okay.
But the term was adapted for the stage Cats by Andrew Lloyd Webber. So, and the way this describes, in the musical, Jellicles are a tribe of cats who gather annually for the Jellicle Ball to be chosen to be reborn into a new life. In Eliot's original poem, Jellicle cats were described as small, black and white, and active at night. In the musical, the Jellicles are a diverse group of cats who are central to the world building. The musical focus on Jellicles as well as musical and dance. It's kind of, and it says, it notes it's unusual for like narrative structure. Here you'll like this. Some say the musical doesn't provide clear answers to questions about the Jellicles.
No shit!
Such as why humans are allowed to observe them, or what the limits of their tribe are. Others say the outcast Grizabella can help define what it means to be a Jellicle. I don't see how.
There's nothing about this movie makes sense. Anybody who's trying to say that there are some type of underlying meanings or messages and then ultimately go to, well, they leave it open for interpretation, that means that it's not there. Yeah.
Well, and the most hilarious part is, so this whole musical, they're trying to, the Jellicle Ball is when Deuteronomy decides who's going to rise to the Heaviside Lair and be reborn. So just to clarify what the Heaviside Layer is, I googled this as well. The Heaviside Layer is a layer of Earth's ionosphere that's located 90 to 150 kilometers above the ground. It's also known the Kennelly Heaviside Layer. It's important for long-distance radio communication because it reflects radio waves and allows them to bounce around the world.
So we're just going to send a cat to space.
The Heaviside Layer is named after Arthur E. Kennelly and Oliver Heaviside, who both independently predicted its existence in 1902.
Good for them.
So
I'll bet that they will be super happy to know that they're, I don't know, they sound like very smart people if they had
Well, yeah, they were scientists in the 1900s.
And the way that we're finding out about it is through the musical Cats.
Yeah, no, I mean, these were the type of guys who were probably like, women can't do science because their brains are too small. Like, they were from that era.
Yeah.
And then to have a musical where a bunch of people are dressed up like cats playing, like, these dudes lived through, like, the Spanish flu and slavery. You know what I mean? And they're like, oh, you're all dressed up in leotards dancing around doing cat stuff? I don't think they'd be excited.
Probably
but,
not.
But in any case, yeah. So they're like, you're going to ascend to the Heaviside Layer, mm-hmm. which is just an area between Earth's atmosphere and space.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you just use the word heaven?
Yeah, and but that brings me to the point of asking, what is the purpose of this story? Like, what is it? What is, like, what are they doing? Why are they going up there? It means nothing. It makes no sense. This whole thing is a fever dream. That's what this entire movie is.
It's fun. That's, I'm serious. I am convinced on it. I think the whole thing is a joke on the audience. And it's literally just meant to be a fun look at, like, what do you think cats are doing when we're not? It's Toy Story. It's the original Toy Story, but it's cats instead of toys.
This really did feel, I felt like this was very culty. Did you get that vibe at all from this?
Yeah, there's a lot of weird chanting.
Yeah. So, and I couldn't help but think about Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman. And her, like, landing and her transition to Catwoman herself. That I'm pretty sure this is exactly what the cats were doing. Like, we saw the meow, meow, meow. What they were doing was, like, Jellicle songs for Jellicle cats.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, dude, this is...
This is the cat seance?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. So that means that...
Catwoman ascended to the Heaviside Lair.
Yep. That's what it was.
I think we figured this whole thing out.
We figured it out.
Honestly, I would not be surprised if Tim Burton took... He was like, okay, what's interesting about Batman? He's like, okay, here's this important character, Catwoman.
Mm-hmm.
And he had just... Because when did Cats premiere? Let's look that up.
I think it was in the 1980s. I think like 1982, 1983. So definitely before Batman Returns.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But what I'm thinking is he went, he saw Cats and was like, I must do something with this. And then he got Batman and he was like, I found the perfect melding.
He's like, finally.
For Batman and Catwoman.
1981.
I must draw inspiration from... Because you know Tim Burton loves cats.
He probably does.
That fucking weirdo. He saw this and he was like, this is pure art. I don't know how he talks. It's probably probably annoying.
Though. I think it's more sniffly than that, I'll bet.
This is art.
Yeah. Yes, that's Tim
this
Burton.
This is art.
100%.
Yes, yes, come here, Helena Bonham Carter, with your ugly face and small boobs. Come here. Yes. He definitely drew inspiration from Catwoman from this piece of shit. I'm so in between. I can't decide if I liked this or I hated it. Because I genuinely really did like a lot of stuff about this. But then there's also all of it. Like, I don't know. There are things I liked so much.
Yeah. But did you
but
actually like
them? But I can't
like
tell
them?
If they're outweighed by...
Yeah, did you actually like them, or did you... Were you just overwhelmed? And that's a coping mechanism. It's to just say, you know what, you know what, you know what? I like this. This
I like
is fine.
It.
I am enjoying what is happening
no,
right now.
No, I definitely liked it. I definitely disliked a lot of it, too.
Yeah.
And but there's also a part of it where it's like I was laughing at a lot of it. So,
yeah, but,
which I
like,
don't think is how it's meant to be enjoyed.
I don't think so either, yeah.
It's not meant to be a comedy.
No.
It certainly came off that way, though.
So then we got to rate. We got to get to ratings. So where are we?
Easy. Scale of 1 to 9 lives.
Okay.
I had that loaded within 5 minutes of watching the movie.
It's the easiest one. Yeah, it's right there. Have you hit a number yet?
No.
Okay. I'll go ahead and say that I'm going to pick the number 2. I'm going to pick 2 lives because I did find myself going, okay, this isn't that bad. I found myself doing that once.
Okay.
In the movie. And but that was in the scene that we had talked about where it was just the two characters having the like the one-on-one. And... But other than that, I was confused. I don't want to use the term disgusted, but I was definitely put off on the visuals to such a degree that it was distracting.
Yeah.
And then when I was like, no, 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 I need to focus on what's happening in the movie, I hated what I was focusing on.
Yeah.
Because all they were doing were singing about cats.
Yeah, that's fair. Honestly, and the one part where I was like, the part where the railway cat,
yeah.
Skittershanks or whatever his name is,
yeah.
When he pops up, there's like this cool transition where they're in one spot. And then the camera does this like panning motion.
Yes.
And then they end up in another spot. And I'm like, oh, that was actually a cool transition.
That was a cool transition.
But where you get transition to is them walking along a train track. And I think, and this is saying a lot, possibly the worst CGI in the whole film.
It was not great.
where the entire world around them is CGI. They're just walking entirely on a green screen, mm-hmm. front, back, center. They're entirely encased by green screen. And the entire, all of the fucking setting is green screened. And I think's probably the worst of it all. So where it's like, even when they have a cool, that is the whole thing of this movie, where it's like, even when they have a nice part, it is immediately juxtaposed by trash.
Uh-huh.
Like, just, and even, like, you could even say, hey, that's a good song. That's really good dancing. It's all within the confines of
this awful movie.
Of horrible CGI, yeah.
Some things don't need to be movies.
No.
Like,
I couldn't agree more with that person's, one of the reviews you read that said, hey, they probably could make Cats into a film that would be good.
Yeah.
This was not that.
I want
to say, oh, it was a fair attempt, but I don't feel like it was. I feel like it was just, it missed the mark on so many points.
Yeah, I think on almost every point.
Where everything good is just kind of drowned out by the bad. Okay, so I'm going to give it two ratings. Like, my kind of honest rating of just how it is, I think I'm right there with you. 2 out of 9 seems fair. Where there's a couple musical numbers I liked. I do genuinely think the ballet and the dancing, and there are these parts where, like, they're acting like cats, and the way they do it is, like, really well done. It feels like you're looking at cats. There are some things that I think are genuinely good, but they're just so drowned out by all the bad. And then my rating of how fun this was to watch, probably like a 7. Like, it was okay. Silly. It's very silly. If you want to watch a bad movie,
if you want to watch a bad movie with friends,
this is a great bad movie to watch with friends. It's funny. There's plenty of stuff to laugh about.
I would agree.
Actually, no, I'm going to give it a 5, because even then, like, there wasn't a ton. There wasn't even we laughed about Idris Elba being like McCavity and then disappearing.
Yeah.
We laughed about how many songs it's like, another song about cats, about this cat and his name, go figure. Mm-hmm. Every time a character gets introduced, you're like, oh, is there going to be a song about this cat? Surprise. There is. So even as a bad movie, I think there are better bad movies to watch.
I would agree.
But I would say it's worth a watch for fun, like to laugh about. Maybe this would be a fun drinking game. Like, every time a new cat is introduced, you take a shot. And by the end of the movie, you're going to be drunk and loving it. But no, I think there are better bad movies to watch. And I just, it's tough. This one was tough.
It was tough.
I'm glad we did it. I'm glad to have been able to see it, because it's nice. It's nice to shit on something when you have actual ammunition. You can be like, I've actually seen it.
Yeah.
And I can shit on it fairly because I've seen it. And sure. I know that it is as bad as everyone says. No surprises there.
Yeah. Yep. Well, there you have it, folks. 2 out of 9 cat lives.
Yeah. 5 out of 9 if you're looking for a bad movie to watch with your friends.
Have you guys seen Cats? And if you have, I'm just going to go back to the question. Why? Let us know. Send us an email at getrecpod@gmail.com. That's GITRECDPOD@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Threads. And the procrastination numbers of getting on to X, I've been procrastinating on that. I'll get around to that tomorrow. And that's about it, folks. I'm dead internally with this one.
Fair. Yeah.
So with that being said, Thor, what are we getting into next week? I hope that it's not cat themed. We've had this weird transition. Oh my gosh, we've had this weird transition where it's like Christmas. Oh. Christmas into Christmas, cat, into cat musical.
Yeah.
So now we're at cat musical. How are you transitioning us into the next episode?
Okay, not musical, but music.
Oh, okay.
So there is a running theme of music, but I promise you it is going to be a departure from Cats.
Oh, good. I'm ready for that.
I got one I think you might like.
Okay.
I'm not sure, though.
All right.
So I know you're not a huge fan of punk music. Old school hardcore punk music.
Yeah, probably not.
Definitely not your cup of tea.
Definitely, yeah.
But I got one I think you might like.
Okay.
So we're going to listen to an album.
All right.
You're an AFI fan.
I do like AFI.
We're going to listen to AFI's very first album from 1995 called Answer That and Stay Fashionable.
Okay.
So AFI in the kind of late 90s, early 2000s kind of went into this they were kind of like the pinnacle emo band.
Yeah.
But they have a lot of, you know what I mean? And I think that era you have Singing the Sorrow, Black Sails, some really good music. And then they went on transition and they got more into the emotional, emo kind of style. Whereas in that period of time that I know you're familiar with them with, they're still playing heavy music and they're kind of in that transitionary period. Answer That and Stay Fashionable is when they were still going by the moniker of East Bay Hardcore,
okay.
Where they are kind of this album is aggressive, angry, fast, punch you in the face punk rock music.
Okay. Well,
the longest song I think is maybe 2.5 minutes.
Okay.
So, but I think you will listen to it and it's definitely much less refined than their later stuff.
Okay.
But it is raw emotion and it is, you will see the seeds of what they ended up doing.
Okay.
Whereas I think a lot of hardcore music and punk music from the 80s and 90s is, I don't want to say simple, but it's much less about intricate building of songs and stuff like that. And whereas this is much less refined than their later stuff, it is, you see the seeds of the things they would go on to do. And I think although it is very aggressive and it is very unrefined, there are still some real gems in there that you may enjoy.
I'm sure that I'll probably find things that I like about it. Looking at the cover of
it
right now,
it's genuinely my favorite AFI is this album.
Oh yeah.
It's so, and just fair warning, it is it's them playing music as fast as humanly possible. And
okay.
It is angry and it is aggressive and it is fucking awesome.
All right.
This is music when you've had a bad day, you put this shit on and it just fucking revs you up, dude.
Okay. Answer That and Stay Fashionable. I'm liking the album cover. It looks very Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It is directly pulled from Reservoir Dogs. And there is a skit, not a skit, but there is an overdub of a part from Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Charlie Chan, fucking Charlie Chan. I got Madonna's big dick coming out of my left ear. That, Harvey Keitel's whole little speech in there. That is in here.
Well, everyone knows I love a good skit. So.
Not a skit, just a drop from Reservoir Dogs.
All right, well, there you go, folks. Next week, we are going to be getting into AFI's first album, Answer That and Stay Fashionable. So listen to it, and then come back next week and follow along with our conversation. Thor, I'm pretty excited for this one. I think that I jumped in with AFI on The Art of Drowning, I think is the one that I jumped in on. That one was they were still punkish at that point. And
yeah,
then the
definitely
next,
a harder album. Yeah.
The next album after that is Sing the Sorrow. And that's when they really, really shifted.
Yes.
I do think for me personally, Sing the Sorrow is their best album. For me, I remember riding to Virginia because we have family in Virginia as well. And I had a CD player with headphones, and I had two CDs. One of them was AFI Sing the Sorrow, and I just listened to that for the entire ride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the other one? Please say Hanson and Bop.
Oh, of course it was Hanson and Bop. Yeah.
That was my first CD I ever owned.
I think my first CD that I ever owned was one of the NSYNC albums, because my mom got it for me. She's like, kids like this.
Yeah, the first one. The second album is No Strings Attached. I forget I had the first album as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I rocked to some NSYNC, and then I found music on my own.
Yeah.
And it was not NSYNC music. But all right, folks, next week, AFI, answer that and stay fashionable. Until next time, folks.
As always.
Oh, you get wrecked out there.
And stay wrecked.
Yeah. I'm going to have a word with our wives.
There's only one way to leave this episode.
How's that?
McCavity!
Hush!